Welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy. Good afternoon, my AOWs. Today we're getting right into it. My baby is due in just a couple days. And by baby, I mean my book, Unlock Your Menopause Type. This has been a really long gestational period. I think about 2 years. I mean, time is kind of a funny thing. So it maybe has been a year, maybe a year and a half. But certainly from the conception and the idea and meeting with my agent to hiring a writer to working on the proposal to having the publishing meetings, auctioning the book, writing the book, tons and tons of edits. Oh gosh, you've heard all of this, right? Reading the audiobook and now finally landing in your lap. It's so exciting to see. And what I'm really excited about today to talk to you a little bit more about my book is the inspiration for the types of menopause. Now, I've been keeping a lot of this under wraps because I really wanted to have fresh, exciting, new content when this book came out. And what I'm really, I would say, one of the most exciting things is that I feel like this is a really shareable book. It's great to really open the dialogue, get people talking, because it's kind of like, what's your type? Well, what's your type? How did you treat it? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? It's so cool because opening the dialogue, having more people talk about midlife and menopause, doing book clubs with this book, I just feel like it's a great way to do that, a great gift, a great opener. My dream is to be on The View because I could just see us, you know, sitting around the table talking about our different types of menopause. And I'm just so excited for you to get the book. So you can still pre-order, and pre-orders are really helpful. That really actually helps when people are thinking, or when they're making bestsellers lists, when they're making, you know, recommendations, when Target or Barnes & Noble is trying to determine how many books to order, pre-orders are really helpful. So if you are interested at all in reading the book, I would love if you went to your favorite place to pre-order. All right, without further ado, my small plug done, I want to tell you about the inspiration for these different types. I say this all the time, and I truly mean this, is that my patients and all the experiences I've had over the last decade treating women truly made this book. Makes me a better doctor, makes me think outside the box, makes me learn how to use a lot of shared decision making. And I'm just so appreciative of all that I've learned from my patients. So the six different types really came to me on a plane, actually. I was on a plane and this came to me and I just wrote it all down. And when I got off the plane, I had my six different types. Now, of course, it took years and writers and dissecting and, you know, researching to really tease that all out. But this idea of the six types really kind of came to me pretty quickly. And this is after about 6 years or so of seeing patients, maybe more. And I want to start with the fact that I do feel as though this is such an inclusive menopause book. So many menopause books are about natural menopause, and this really excludes women who go through menopause early, who have surgery, who've been shocked into it from chemo, and women who've never had a hot flash a day in their life, you know, the one friend in your group. What happens to their bodies during menopause, and what are the unique differences that they need to learn about? So I really want to walk you through a couple of off the top of my head examples of these different types of menopause. And yes, these are all from my experiences, and my patients and names, professions have all been changed. Even though almost everyone, every time I ask that, people are like, it's okay, you don't have to. But first of all, legally, St. Martin's Press will make sure that we do. That's my publishing house. And also, I just think that that's best. I will not give away any identities. So premature menopause is the first type of menopause. And this is actually certainly a subset of menopause where premature menopause is menopause before age 40 and early menopause is menopause before age 45. And what's really important about premature and early menopause is the evidence-based standard of care is hormone replacement therapy. Different than sort of it's like a quote choice for women who are having symptoms in their natural menopause, 50s, whatever, premature and early menopause should be treated with estrogen and then a progesterone if you still have a uterus to protect your long-term health. Without it, can increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, bone loss, pelvic floor changes, and certainly just worsening quality of life. So it's necessary. I had a patient come to me in Ohio, and she had a twin sister, and both of them had had premature menopause. And actually, the twin sister was married, and they really wanted to have a baby, and so she was undergoing reproductive technology or assisted reproductive technology or IVF or IUI. I can't remember at the time, but my patient did not want a baby, at least not right now, and she was in her 20s. She was in her 20s. She just wanted to feel normal. She said, I feel like I'm 58 years old. I'm in this new relationship. I have no libido. I don't want anyone to touch me. I don't think about it. I feel tired. My joints hurt. And she just felt so dejected. I remember this conversation like it was yesterday. My youngest patient ever was 17. And this was primarily surgical menopause, I believe, at age 17 versus my 26, 28-year-old who had menopause of just unknown etiology, which we just call premature ovarian insufficiency. It used to be called premature ovarian failure. And she had been on some HRT, but she had gone to a reproductive endocrinologist, an REI doctor, because, in theory, they should also be able to help with the endocrinopathy of menopause, right? The unfortunate truth is, she said, I sat down with the doctor and all they wanted to do is really talk to me about egg preservation, my chances of fertility. And then it was like, yeah, here's a little patch for you. And she said, I just didn't feel heard. Like my menopause was just sort of this thing. It wasn't as important as my ability to reproduce or my desire to reproduce or like how I was going to feel about reproducing, 5 years down the road. And, there's so many unique differences here. There's psychological differences. There's certainly biological differences. This young lady, is going to spend another 1 or 2 decades with her friends, trying to get pregnant and being postpartum and breastfeeding and facing all those different struggles of being postmenopausal from premature ovarian insufficiency at such a young age. Now, sudden menopause is, in my experience, typically some kind of medication or a surgery can also be a surgery that throws you into menopause. I think about chemotherapy throws you into menopause. Lupron, a medication for endometriosis, throws you into menopause. Surgical menopause, and I see this a lot because there's certainly more women being checked for high-risk genetic mutations, BRCA1, BRCA2. And because of that, they're being thrown into menopause. And so sudden menopause is kind of like different than premature or early, where it's even though, yes, premature ovarian insufficiency could happen quickly, it tends to kind of slowly creep up on you. You start to notice your period slowly change. You didn't start like a new medication or have a big surgery, which then you kind of, again, let's say you had surgical menopause at like 37. Now you've got premature and surgical and sudden menopause. They can cross over. But sudden really seems to be this like one day you're in menopause, one day you're not. I had so many patients thrown into sudden menopause. And one of the things that I hear so often from them was like, I wish I knew what was going to happen on the other end of this. I wish someone told me, yes, you're going to reduce your risk for ovarian cancer, but you might increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. You might increase your risk for diabetes. You might gain weight and have hot flashes and have low libido. I wish someone told me this. It feels really unfair to patients. And a lot of times, whether it's surgery or whether it's chemo, there's always this like, we have to do this quickly. We have to do this immediately. And that's okay. Whether that's right or wrong doesn't matter. But there is this like sort of, well, now we have this diagnosis. Now you need to start this medication. Now you need to start this chemo. Now you need this pelvic radiation, let's say it is. And then just one day, boom, no perimenopause, just straight into menopause. It can really, really affect your body. We know that surgical or sudden menopause can cause more weight gain, can cause longer and more persistent symptoms. And for those patients, especially patients if they've got chemo, if they're a high risk for cancer, they might want to take HRT, might not want to take HRT. Or maybe they're confused. Can you take HRT if you're a BRCA patient and you don't have cancer? So I talk a lot about that and those options in my book. And where there's some crossover here is that certainly sudden menopause, you know, tends to happen to my younger patients. Now younger, you could be 46, 47, you know, 37. So you could have, again, a mixture of premature and sudden. But there's differences here in terms of how to treat these symptoms without HRT and who can take HRT. The next type I talk about is full throttle menopause. And my a patient of mine I just missed dearly from Ohio came to see me and said, you know, during my surgeries, I'm having hot flashes. I feel horrible. I'm not focusing. Sometimes my goggles get all flushed, you know, and we were like, oh my goodness. Granted, nothing had happened to her, but she was just like, this is not real. This is not sustainable here. And, you know, she had also, you know, what I call the full throttle, weight gain, low libido, hair loss, brittle nails, dry skin, joint aches and pains, like the whole, you know, 28 symptoms of menopause, like everything on the list. I call that full throttle menopause. And what's interesting about full throttle menopause is I found usually a low dose of estrogen and progesterone if you have a uterus, really just like, boom, that's what hormone replacement therapy is FDA approved for. This is where I want to again make that statement of so many patients that I see in my private telemedicine practice, and even, gosh, in the decade before, come to see me and they'll say, oh, my doctor started gabapentin for sleep and Paxil for hot flashes and metformin for weight loss or Topamax for weight loss. And then, you know, this for that and this for that and this for that and this for that. When HRT, you know, can treat everything. And it's funny, and I say this all the time, that for no apparent reason, doctors have an emotional reaction towards the word estrogen and testosterone and those medications. Not a logical one, not following guidelines, not following evidence-based research. That's why I podcast and so many of my colleagues podcast, and you hear us talking all the time, is because doctors who aren't well-versed in menopause, who don't read this literature every day, who don't treat patients every day, they just dropped off where they last heard, which was that hormone therapy is dangerous. And because they are so darn afraid that they don't know how to do it, they don't know what the answer is, they just try to scare you. It's like kryptonite. Anything they could say to keep you from asking or keep you away from it. It's just, it's unbelievably ridiculous, because this is an FDA-approved, safe, and effective medication that should be first line. So full throttle menopause, HRT, baby. And my patient felt so much better. She went into surgery. She was clear-headed. She started sleeping. Her libido came back. She didn't have foggy goggles anymore during surgery and felt like $1 million. I hope she's still on it, because I haven't seen her in a couple of years. Mind-altering menopause type is next. And I take mental health extremely seriously. It is not lost on me that depression or crippling anxiety, but either one of those can take lives of women in menopause. And we know it, and I know it, and I've seen it, and I'm sure you've seen it too. I lost a patient after I left Boston, and I see patients all the time telling me, I never really had this anxiety before. Now all of a sudden it's just overtaking me. I've had patients say, yes, I had struggled with depression at different times of my life, and now it is back, and the medications that I'm on that's been controlling this is not working. I am tearful. I'm going in and out of the psychiatrist's office. I've tried a bunch of different things. Nothing is working. And this all happened as my patients lost their estrogen. I wish there was more data on hormone therapy and mood. There's some. And the little data that we do have actually does show that estrogen does tend to help mood. The data shows a little bit more in perimenopause compared to menopause. I don't know if that's totally true. I think because I'm a clinician and I prescribe HRT every day, that estrogen does help mood in perimenopause and menopause. Not that it's always the only answer. Not that sometimes it's not useful to be on an SSRI or a mood stabilizer or Lamictal and estrogen, certainly. But I just saw a patient today in that scenario. She said, I have suffered with PMDD, with depression most of my life, but got it under control. Like in my 40s, it started to get bad, started working with my psychiatrist, got on this medication, got on that medication. I felt really good until about perimenopause. And since then, I've just lost motivation. I've lost desire. I've lost joy. And I'm just kind of existing. I'm existing to exist. And I know you've heard it either from yourself or from a friend. Or you're like, that sounds like something, right? And so the mind-altering menopause type is about mood, but also cognition, brain fog, ADHD, trouble with memory, recall. I remember having an anthropology professor coming to me and saying, I cannot keep up with my students. I feel like such a bumbling idiot. I can't grade my papers. Sometimes they ask me questions in class and I'm like halfway through explaining the answer and then I just completely lost where I was. Like I'm a tenured professor. This is my identity. This is embarrassing. And this is really where the mind-altering menopause type came in, because not only do I talk about in my book like how to treat with HRT, how to treat with non-HRT, but I also talk about diet and lifestyle and exercise and the mind kinds of exercise you can do for each type. So this book is just cool. It's cool. It's wild. Anyways, I think this is important in and of itself for me to say to the world, look, you might not be coming to me with hot flashes that make you want to crawl out of your skin. You might not have vaginal dryness that feels like knives. You might not have those things. You might just have crippling anxiety or depression with a sprinkling of hot flashes. So can you consider HRT? Absolutely. What about the brain fog? What about my patients worried about dementia and early Alzheimer's and getting neurocognitive testing happens all the time? Can you try HRT? Yeah. Certainly. There's other really important brain games to do, exercises to do, tips and tricks that they have for the mind-altering menopause type. Sorry for my Apple Watch. She keeps dinging and you guys know that I don't have the time to edit, so it's not your watch. It's mine. All right, next is the seemingly never-ending menopause type. This type is more common than I bet I see. Because a seemingly never-ending type of menopause is, and maybe this is you or like that friend, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And all of a sudden you look at your Apple Watch and you're like, huh, it's been 7 years with this vaginal dryness. Or it's been 6 years with this horrible hair thinning, not really terrible, never really thought about it much, but Or gosh, I never really thought about this getting up at night in the middle of the night having to pee. Could that be a symptom? Or maybe it really is more like, yeah, I've been having terrible hot flashes for 6 or 7 years, but I just haven't gotten around to it. I kept thinking they were going to stop. I tried the Plaque Cohosh. It stopped for a month or two. Then it came back. My doctor said there was nothing I could do. That's kind of the seemingly never ending. Like they're never typically typified by symptoms that are like mild to moderate that just last forever. I talk a lot in this chapter about self-care, about vaginal estrogen, about sexual health, because these are things that, especially as women, taking care of so many other people, our clients, our patients, our superiors, our parents, our pets, our houses, our spouses, like there's so much that we do forget to make a doctor's appointment for ourselves. As I'm saying this, literally no joke. I have not seen a primary care doctor in probably 2 years. I know. Well, I moved. Isn't that like reason enough? No. We all say the same thing. We all move or we all change jobs or our insurance changes or our kids take priorities. So there, I'm, trust me, I do as I say, not as I do. So the seemingly never ending, I talk a lot about self-care, why it's important to get in, what lingering symptoms can do to your body and how they can affect not just you, but your marriage, your mood, your productivity at work, your sexual life. And so the seemingly never ending is that symptoms that just go on and on and on. All right, wrapping this up is the silent menopause type. And actually, interestingly, I think this is like the secret winner. There's no winners, you don't win. Of course, everyone wants to have the silent menopause type, but the silent menopause type is fascinating, I think, to talk about, because that one friend who doesn't have a hot flash a day in her life is less likely potentially to think about her bones, her brain health changing, or her cardiovascular risk changing, because there's no outward sign that your body is changing. You know, people will even say like, I don't even know if I went through menopause, you know, and they haven't had periods in years. And I'm like, oh no, you are postmenopausal. You did go through menopause. You just didn't experience the outward symptoms. But if you don't experience any outward symptoms, I think it's easier to just, you know, kind of forget screening, not think about how your brain and your heart and your bones and your pelvic floor all change as you go through menopause. So, you know, in the book, I talk about my patient who had a spine fracture because she just didn't have a bone density because she just felt so great and she was doing tennis and she was eating well and she was of a healthy BMI, but all of a sudden had a spine fracture on Thanksgiving. And so the silent menopause type also came up in the Oprah Daily panel when Maria Shriver said, yes, you know, I'm so interested in bone health and the statistics that we see about Alzheimer's. More women have Alzheimer's than men, right? Women lose estrogen, men don't. And so I think the silent menopause type, there's a lot in there that's actually really quite interesting. And so I hope that gives you a little bit of taste of like what the different types are, where they came from, how I came up with that, and how I hope that this book really does start to open the dialogue around midlife and menopause care. Now, if you've listened this far, exciting news. I'm working on a perimenopause book. Yes. You know, at first my agent, Jane, she's like, are you sure that there's enough for another book? And I was like, oh no, yeah, there is. So I sat down to write my own proposal. And in your proposal, just what it sounds like, it's a proposal to write a book. And that's kind of what you sell. And then you to the publishing house, and then you write the whole book. And I wouldn't have known this 3 years ago, but you probably did. That's why I'm saying it out loud. And so I went through the exercise of writing the proposal for the perimenopause book and kind of came up with either, and I'm not sure exactly how it's going to come, but sort of like this idea of like, what is the big symptom that's driving perimenopause? The physiology behind perimenopause is so different. The symptoms are so different. The treatments are so different. And this is really exciting because Unlock Your Menopause Type is a fantastic book. Oh my gosh. But it really is geared towards women once their periods have stopped. There's a little bit about perimenopause in the intro, and I think the DIY section in part three, we endearingly call it the DIY, because in part three of the book, I talk all about how can you change lifestyle, diet, and supplements to control your symptoms as well. So that could help a little bit with perimenopause, but this is really geared towards women whose periods have mostly stopped or stopping or stopped or stopped decades ago. So I'm really, really excited. I know so many of you are like, yes, a book for perimenopause, because in many ways, perimenopause is certainly just as, if not more, frustrating. So more to come on that. Thank you guys so much for listening to me talk about my baby. I can't believe she's going to be on shelves soon. I would love to know if you got the book, if you're going to read the book, if you're going to share the book, what you think about it. I'm nervous to read the Amazon comments. Oh, people tell me not to even look, but I probably can't help it. Thank you guys so much for being in my army of women. Thank you guys for loving the show. I have so many incredible episodes coming up. Yes, I've got more guests. Yes, a lot of these are actually pre-recorded, and I'm so excited. Also, I am putting them up on YouTube. I actually have like, oh my goodness, I have like probably 20 podcasts that I've done with guests that I always record them, and I didn't really put them on YouTube for a while. I it's sort of a long, random, not very interesting story about how it can mess up your YouTube retention, but YouTube did a nice thing for creators like a few months ago where they created a whole podcast section, which is great just because it doesn't mess up your analytics as much. It's a whole, like, I don't know, YouTube algorithm thing. Anyways, needless to say, I'm going to start putting some of my old podcasts up there. I put up the one with Dr. Avram Blooming. This was a podcast that went totally viral. That's now up on YouTube, and a lot more of my other amazing podcasts are coming up on YouTube. Thank you guys so much for listening. I am now just rambling. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye, everyone. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.